someone's ideology or religion has no role to play when it comes to making decisions on our nation's highest court.
That's Scott McClellan. He is the press secretary for President George W. Bush, answering questions about the relevance of the religious views of Harriet Myers, who is the president's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. This has become a bit of a tempest in a teapot. Maybe it's bigger than just a teapot. Something has happened that and this very seldom happens, not because I'm so bright or because I know what's going to happen next. It's just that this is unexpected. I find it almost entirely unexpected that much of the president's normal supporters and allies and colleagues would now, and I'm talking most about people on the radio and television and writing news columns, would be suggesting that the president might think about working out maybe a face-saving withdrawal of Harriet Myers from this nomination. Not everyone. There's still a few who are sticking by it or saying, let's wait and see, but the tide has definitely turned. And the president has managed to raise the ire of his normally loyal supporters by suggesting that their opposition to Harriet Myers might be founded in some sort of sexism. A very odd response of the White House there. Now, we're going to be hearing more from Scott McClellan in this press briefing where he's answering questions about Harriet Myers' religious views and how relevant they might be for her prospects as a Supreme Court nominee and a Supreme Court justice, and how relevant they would be if she serves on the Supreme Court after being confirmed by the U.S. Senate. On a related subject, Dr. James Dobson, a couple days ago, said that he was going to be supporting Harriet Myers and the nomination of this woman for the Supreme Court. He is, to a certain degree, bucking the trend of the so-called religious right. He seems sure, based upon a conversation he had with the president's chief political advisor, Karl Rove, that she is going to do right by Roe v. Wade. She's going to do right by the pro-life cause. She's going to do right by all the other concerns that the religious right have about her nomination. He is something of a lone voice. Now, yesterday on his Focus on the Family program, and we have some audio from that program yesterday, he talked about his conversation with Karl Rove. We'll be hearing from him just a little bit, too, in a few minutes here on Issues, Etc. It is Open Lines, the third hour of the program. Your questions and your comments. What do you think about the calls for the president to possibly withdraw her nomination? Now, that's very unlikely to happen, I think. I mean, this is just an opinion, but I think it's unlikely to happen because any president who's going to nominate someone, unless there's serious problems, like legal problems, with the nominee, is going to keep them on the table. Now, what might happen is an arranged withdrawal of the nominee herself, but that's all speculation. What do you think about the suggestion that the president considers such a thing? It's all I was hearing about this morning on the radio. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And how relevant are her religious views? When it was John Roberts, it was John Roberts, devout Roman Catholic. And that pretty much summed up for a lot of people where he stood on a lot of the relevant issues like life, maybe even the death penalty, who knows, homosexual marriage, all of the kind of social and moral issues that were supposed to come before the U.S. Supreme Court in the next decades. With Harriet Myers, it is evangelical. That's the message being sent out. And the White House has been pushing the fact that she is an evangelical. I don't think they're saying devout evangelical. I don't know what their adjective is. So her religious views are part of the question, and it was part of the questions being posed to Scott McClellan in a press briefing. Here he is again, Scott McClellan, answering for the president on what the public is still learning about the president's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court.
We do reach out to a lot of people, and Harriet Myers is not someone who has sought the limelight, so there are a lot of Americans who are just beginning to get to know who she is.
Well, that's an understatement. I mean, beginning to get to know her is, we know her name, we know what jobs she's held, we know a few details of her life, but because she has not served in a court, because she has not served as a judge, no sin in that, by the way, shouldn't have to be a judge to sit on the Supreme Court, because she hasn't, well, there's no paper trail. So we know so very, very little about about her positions and who she is and what she stands for. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, and yet some are saying she's too big of a question mark. She should be withdrawn. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Scott McClellan again on what everyone wants to know about her.
When you're getting to know someone, you want to know what their qualifications and experience are. You want to know what their judicial philosophy is, and you want to know who they are.
Those are exactly the kind of questions they're going to be asking in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Exactly the kind of questions, in one form or another, to sort out who this woman is. And some might say, look, all of this speculation about whether the president should pull her off the table is premature because she hasn't even sat down in front of that committee. Maybe after that. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here in the middle of our audio, let's talk with a few listeners, starting with Dave, who calls from his car. Dave, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, I just wanted to make the comment in regard, I know Jim Dobson is hailed and talked about a lot, but Jay Fekulow with the ACLJ and also Richard Land, the Baptist talk show host, also are firmly in support of the president's nomination. So Jim Dobson is not alone on that, so.
Well, he's certainly not alone, but he is alone when it comes. Well, he's not alone. As I said, he's kind of slightly bucking the trend here. There are others, and I'm talking, as I mentioned before, I'm talking about columnist George Will, a couple others, who are saying, look, this is something the president might want to consider. There's a better candidate out there. No one's saying who it is. There's a better candidate out there. Give us the candidate you promised us when you were elected and pull Myers off the shelf. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Again, here's Scott McClellan, the president's press secretary, on what role he thinks, what role the White House thinks Myers' religion will play.
Harriet Myers is a person of faith. She recognizes, however, that a person's religion or personal views have no role when it comes to making decisions as a judge.
Now, that's curious to me because it sounds to me, and this is, it sounds to me a little bit like having your cake and eating it too. She's an evangelical. That's the message that's been coming out from the White House on her when first the objections were raised. Look, she's an evangelical. She's a member of a Dallas church where they're pro-life. Fill in the gaps, connect the dots, and then say, but that's not going to have any relevance on how she's going to conduct herself and shouldn't have any relevance on how she conducts herself as a Supreme Court justice, and she knows it. So why are we talking about it? Why is the White House reminding us that she's an evangelical member of a pro-life church in Dallas? If it really has nothing to do with, number one, her qualifications, number two, what she's going to do in the future if confirmed. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's not unheard of for a president to withdraw a judicial nominee. Although the only ones I can remember have something to do with legal problems in the nominee's past or present that were unknown to the White House. And then, well, of course, you're going to say you're not nominated anymore. Finally, here is Scott McClellan one more time. He's talking about why the nominee, Harriet Myers' religious views, have been a topic and why the White House has been talking about her religious views.
It's part of who she is, and faith has played an important part in her life, but she recognizes that religion and personal views and ideology don't have a role to play when you're a judge, but people want to know who she is.
Okay, it is informative to know who she is, but this is more, really, this is more than just getting to know someone at a cocktail party, isn't it? This is more than reading someone's profile on an online dating service. I want to know who you are. Tell me about your religious views. It's way more than that. So, yes, it is, of course, relevant in figuring out what kind of a person she is. But if it is entirely irrelevant to her prospect and her performance as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, I just don't know why they keep reminding us that she is a member of an evangelical pro-life church. If this is just, hey, let's get to know Harriet Meyer, that's not what's going to be happening when the Senate Judiciary Committee meets. They just don't want to get to know her. They can do that at a Washington bar, they can get to know her. They can find out all about her. They're precisely concerned about how her religious views will impact her thoughts and her future votes on the U.S. Supreme Court. Steve calls from his car. Steve, welcome to Issues, Etc.
One of my thoughts about this whole thing is it's sort of a wink, wink, nod, nod thing. Where they talk, as you mentioned earlier, they're talking about both sides of their mouth. And one of my things is says that with this nominee, you're going from like the top of the heap to we don't even know this person in terms of just what they're good at compared to Robertson. I mean, you're going from the stellar. But my point is that with Dobson and with this political mess he's getting into, is he basically turning focus on the family into basically a Republican organization and its legitimacy as a Christian organization will be compromised just because of the politicalness he's getting himself into? And it's by his choice also.
That's a great question, Steve. That's a great question. In the military, they talk about mission creep, about how you go out into the field of battle with a mission, with a defined mission. But of course, all plans end at the front line. So the mission will inevitably change as time goes by. And as you execute the mission, it changes and you adapt to it. Well, when they talk about mission creep, they mean, you put men on the ground with a mission. And before you know it, what they're doing bears absolutely no resemblance whatsoever to why they were sent there. And the purpose for them being there changes entirely, too. Now, it's something that happens. I've noted a bit of mission creep, not just a bit, a lot of mission creep, when it comes to focus on the family. A family organization that is about helping families, and does a very good job when it sticks to its mission. But James Dobson has become more than just America's psychologist or psychiatrist or therapist or family counselor. And his show, ostensibly for people raising kids, that's what a family is, right? Husbands and wives raising kids, has crept a bit, especially yesterday, into this realm of, well, James Dobson political, I'm not going to call him political activist, I'll call him James Dobson political player. Personal conversations with Karl Rove. There's a reason why James Dobson is in Karl Rove's Rolodex. And it's not just because Karl Rove wants to know how to raise his kids better. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Speaking of James Dobson, yesterday he was answering the question on his Focus on the Family program that everyone was asking of him, and that is, what did you and Karl Rove really talk about? What was this conversation you've alluded to here? Now, some of this is not in the audio, so let me give you a little background. I listened to the entire program yesterday, and James Dobson said, look, there was a conference call, right, of some people. You know what kind of people I'm talking about. And the president's people were talking with the rest of the people. And I came in late on the conference call, but I was ready to support Harriet Meyer as a nominee because I'd talked with Karl Rove. And everyone wanted to know what Karl Rove told me, but I wasn't at liberty to say. Well, as of yesterday, Karl Rove gave him permission to say. So he said what they talked about, what they didn't talk about. Here is Dr. James Dobson of Focus on the Family. Our audio does come from Focus on the Family's program, the radio program, yesterday on the show, about what Karl Rove told him about the nominee list.
What Karl told me is that some of those individuals took themselves off that list and they would not allow their names to be considered because the process has become so vicious and so vitriolic and so bitter that they didn't want to subject themselves or the members of their families to it.
All right, he's trying to explain here, and I think given the context, Rove is trying to explain to Dobson, look, why did we come up with Harriet Myers? Well, the list got small. It got small because the process is so dirty and so arduous that people were dropping off the list. They just didn't want to be considered anymore. And the reason we didn't go for X or Y or Z, as so many people would like to us have done, is because they dropped out. Now, Rove did not specify who dropped out and who remained on the list. But that's the big picture here, is Harriet Myers, it became a process of elimination, a selection by attrition, if you will. Here's James Dobson again talking about what the president was looking for by way of a replacement, and that he was looking specifically for a woman.
He also made it clear that the president was looking for a certain kind of candidate, and namely a woman, to replace Justice O'Connor. And you can imagine what that did to the short list.
Well, okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, if a fourth of the people on the list drop off because they don't want to go through the process, what would you call it, the colonoscopy of becoming a U.S. Supreme Court nominee, to put it gently. And then if it's a 50-50 list of men and women, the president wants to consider only women for this position, the men are ruled out, then the list gets really, really short. And it sounds here at this point as though Rove is saying, or as though Dobson is saying, that Rove is trying to explain, look, it kind of came down to Harriet Myers. But the question remains, her religious views. What are they? How relevant are they? Are they important? Now, Dobson is a man who stands on that very fuzzy line between politics and religion in the American landscape. He is a religious figure, although he's not an ordained clergyman. He's a devout and professed Christian, by all accounts. But also, as time goes by, and Steve noted this when he called, more and more a political player with some position in politics. Not elected, but a position in politics. A man of influence, a man who does, from time to time, call to action the troops on issues of the ballot box. And from time to time does swing a considerable amount of weight when he says, look, the people who listen to my show, read my magazine, and are connected with our ministry, vote. And people listen to James Dobson. So religion is a factor here. Now, what did they talk about? Dobson here says that the rumors about what he, Dobson, and Rove talked about and what Rove told him that are flying around are simply not true.
What the Democrats have concluded in their wildest speculation is that Mr. Rove laid out for me a detailed promise that Ms. Myers would vote to overturn Roe v. Wade and revealed all the other judicial opinions that she has supposedly prejudged. It did not happen.
Okay, so Roe was not part of the conversation, or at least specifics on how she would vote on any Roe-related Supreme Court case was not part of the conversation. No promises were made about Roe or any of these other touchy issues with the religious right. That did not happen, says Dobson. So what did they talk about? Now, as time goes by, as you listen to these cuts, you might begin to feel a sense of deja vu. Yesterday, or the day before, we played some audio for you from Pat Buchanan. He was not altogether buying the president's words when he said that the president never discussed Roe or abortion with his nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. Pat Buchanan said, well, he started to say, I don't believe it. But then he caught himself and he just came short of saying he didn't believe it. He found it difficult to believe it. And I also find it a little difficult to believe, I'm skeptical though, that Karl Rove calls James Dobson and the subject of Roe v. Wade and all these things just doesn't come up. That they don't talk about it. Now, I accept that he says no promises were made. But here's Dobson again. Did Roe indicate Myers' voting inclinations on any of these issues?
Karl Rove didn't tell me anything about the way Harriet Myers would vote on cases that may come before the Supreme Court.
Now, that may be because Karl Rove simply doesn't know. It may be that no one knows except Harriet Myers. which, if you're drawing a question mark next to her name, makes the question mark bigger and not smaller. I want a White House that has pledged to nominate Supreme Court justices that will take a hard look at Roe to know. Insofar as it can be known, I want them to know, to have talked about it with their nominee. Look, Roe isn't just law. Roe isn't just a matter of politics. Roe is life and death. It is, and it has been for 30 years plus. It's not just bad law. It's bad. Bad in every way it can be bad. Heck, even if the president hadn't promised to get a Scalia/Thomas type of person onto the court, even if he hadn't promised to do that, and that's code for anti-Roe, we know this, even if he hadn't promised it, I want him to have talked to the nominee about it. It is the landmark of all landmark cases in the last 50 years, 100 years, perhaps, in the U.S. Supreme Court. What do you think? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Going into this break, let's have a quick conversation with Steve, who calls from his car. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hey, Todd. I've listened to talk radio pretty consistently throughout the last several days. Everybody from Laura Ingraham to Rush Limbaugh and Hannity and yourself and all the callers. And also the comments of people like Rove and Dobson, et cetera. And I think they're kind of playing a little game here, I think, where they're, if you listen really to the specific words they use, they do a lot of parsing of words, and as someone said earlier, wink, wink, nod, nod, reading between the lines, I think there probably are some rules and regulations regarding, you know, vetting these candidates and how specific they can question them, but I'm sure Roe, you know, use the assurances, evangelical Christian, and, you know, those sorts of things without kind of getting everybody to read between the lines of what he wanted to impress, so that, you know, Dobson just said in that last comment, he said issues before the Supreme Court. Well, does that mean issues that could come before the Supreme Court in the future, or that issues that are before the Supreme Court now? I mean, there's just a lot of wordplay going on here, I think.
Yeah, it could be interpreted as wordplay. Steve, thank you very much. You know, there's the danger to overparse or to be naive and think that no parsing is necessary. And I don't know where the fine line between those two lie here. I do know this, and I know it simply because it's an opinion of mine, strongly held. Look, any nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, any president nominating a nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, talk about Roe before you nominate him. Talk about abortion before you nominate him. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Jesus said, "Make disciples of all nations by baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and by teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you." The baptized Christian life is one of learning from the very earliest ages. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is the Follow and Do series for children. This is a catechism for small children. Each book in the series is $6.99. The entire series is $33.99. You can find the Follow and Do series at one of two CPH bookstore locations in St. Louis. The first is in the city at 3558 South Jefferson. The other on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. When you visit, ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October, the Follow and Do series for children. For more information, visit our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find the Book of the Month for October there on the homepage.
Genesis, just a spiritual message?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the intriguing book, The Dinosaurs of Eden. Ken, how do you respond to people who say Genesis is a metaphor or contains just a spiritual message?
Mark, there are many Christians who don't believe that Genesis is a literal account of history. Let me give you an example. A Christian magazine interviewed several believers about the age of the earth. AIG was featured along with the chairman of the biology department of a Christian college. Here's how the professor answered the question, "Do you believe religion plays a role in determining the age of the earth?" Quote, "In short, no. I see nothing in Scripture that would lead me to the conclusion that God is trying to tell us the age of the earth. The message of scriptural accounts of creation appears to be primarily a spiritual message telling how we should live and relate to one another and to God." End of quote. When asked how old the earth is, this same professor from the Christian college said, quote, "According to the U.S. Geologic Survey, it is approximately 4.54 billion years old." End of quote. Once you've told students at a Christian college to accept man's fallible dating methods and not to take the first chapters of Genesis as written, you've undermined the Bible's authority. You see, Christian morals and all biblical doctrines are founded in Genesis. Reject Genesis, and the students will just throw the Bible away.
What about dinosaurs? Can they be used to defend the Bible? Ken Ham says yes, and read his findings on our website, answersradio.com.
Dr. Carl Fakencher on the Center of Seminary Life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Certainly, we would begin by expressing our strong commitment to the Scriptures and the Lutheran Confessions. Everything that we do here is gathered around God's Word, whether that is a matter of our daily worship in the chapel or the prayer life that is a part of our activity together. The classes themselves are always focused on proclaiming Christ as well. I think another very important aspect of our seminary that makes us unique is the relationship between the faculty and the students. And of course, always it's based on our shared faith in Christ Jesus.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or to schedule an on-campus visit, call 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155.
We spontaneously are doing good works. If you read Matthew 25, remember how the Christians are all surprised how they serve the Lord? Because whatever you do to the least of these, you do unto me. So one of the marks of doing a fruit of the Holy Spirit is that we are unaware of it. As soon as you become aware of it, you may begin to boast about it, and then it falls into mortal sin.
Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, weekday evenings at 6:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
Karl Rove didn't tell me anything about the way Harriet Myers would vote on cases that may come before the Supreme Court.
I don't know. I'm listening to it again. I'm thinking, that doesn't sound like he's parsing words to me. With all due respect to the caller before the break, it doesn't sound like he's parsing words. Dr. James Dobson from Focus on the Family yesterday talking about his conversations with Karl Rove about Harriet Myers, the president's nominee for the vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. People are talking about him suggesting that he pull her off. Dobson is one among a few who are sticking by the president, sticking by the nominee, and he says he's convinced based upon what Karl Rove told him, although Rove apparently did not come up in that conversation either. Let's go back to the phones. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines. Anything you want to talk about? Talk about the Harriet Myers nomination. What do you think about it? Your general reaction, if you don't want to get specific, your general reaction to the president's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court. Barry calls from Washington, D.C. Barry, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much, Todd. You're having a great show today, like usual.
Oh, thank you.
Perhaps one of the greatest men ever nominated for the court that got shot down, at least in recent memory, was Judge Bork.
Oh, yeah.
Now, my uncle had him as a law professor at Yale Law School years ago, and he always insisted that Bork was the brightest man he had ever met. The problem was that he had extensive writings. He commented on all sorts of issues. And if your listeners remember, the reason why he was turned down was because he had written an opinion on stare decisis.
Yes.
And what that means is that once a decision is made, it becomes the law of the land. He said, no, stare decisis should be overturned, that we can overturn. And this is code words for Roe versus, for the Roe decision.
Yes.
If we can overturn Roe, that means we have to overturn stare decisis. And that's why the last man who was nominated by the president was supported by so many people because he said he supported stare decisis, which is code words for saying, I'm not going to get rid of Roe versus Wade. Mm,
interesting. Now, Barry, before I let you go, you're a bright guy. What do you think of the president saying in the press conference last week, the Rose Garden press conference, where he said, look, we didn't talk about Roe, he and Harriet Meyer. We just haven't discussed abortion. We haven't discussed Roe. And then now, through James Dobson, we got some more audio to back this up. James Dobson saying when he had his conversation with Karl Rove, it's not they didn't talk about Roe, but the subject of abortion was not the central issue of their conversation.
The term we use here inside the Beltway is borking a candidate after Judge Bork. And the reason why they don't pointedly don't discuss this, if there's a chance that a person will ever be nominated for the court, they will not in public say these things. Because they don't want to be pinned down in the hearings, because really, the Senate does not have enough votes to pass a pro-life candidate.
So Roe is a political third rail still when it comes to judicial nominees, and so knowing it's a third rail, everyone says, I don't even know that the third rail exists. What third rail? What are you talking about?
And on top of that, the president's popularity is down to, what, 37%. He knows that if he talks about her being an evangelical Christian, that will pull in and boost him up over 40. He's looking for votes. He's looking for support. It's all politics.
Interesting thoughts, Barry. And a great call. Thank you very much for listening out there in D.C. On the Internet. And it's always a pleasure to talk with Barry. I just get all Twitter when Barry calls because he's got some very interesting thoughts and insights to share with all of us. 505-7850, 1-800-730-7850. 2727. More audio from James Dobson coming up here, but first let's talk with Greg, who calls from his car. Greg, welcome.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say, if I'm supposed to ignore that she's an evangelical, and they push it a lot, but I'm supposed to ignore it, then what other possible reason would there be to have her be a nominee? There's 90 jillion female lawyers out there. Why particularly her? I mean, you know, it's not all we're at that point, then it's simply a matter of taking President Bush's word. I like President Bush. I'm not knocking him. As for me to trust him based on nothing but his opinion, when I see past Republican presidents have made some truly awful choices, including his father with Souter, and I mean it just goes on and on. And I believe it's nine Supreme Court justices done by the Republicans. Seven have been liberal to moderate liberal. So just the trust me, I know what I'm doing stuff. I don't buy it. This is a really long term repercussion thing, and I was fine with Roberts because he's got a record, and I don't have to just do a trust me. This is good. I can look it up and I can see how it is. I really get nervous when I'm asked to trust somebody, even though I can't use any of the information that we do know about them in making a decision. It just seems ludicrous to me.
Greg, thank you very much. That's the key for me as well. I mean, really, that's the key. If the president said, we did talk about Roe, we talked about Roe extensively. She shared her judicial philosophy with me and applied it to Roe. But I'm not going to tell you what she said. Trust me. That would be different. See, I trust George W. Bush. I mean, as much as one could trust a president, I trust George W. Bush. I do. But the thing that troubles me is not him so much saying, trust me. What troubles me is him saying, we didn't talk about it. That's why I said what I said going into the break. Any president, Republican, Democrat, doesn't make a difference. Any judicial nominee, especially for the Supreme Court, talk about Roe. It seems as though you almost have to, unless there is no plan to overturn it, unless there is no will to overturn it, unless it's not even in the cards to overturn it. You see what I'm saying here? Pat Buchanan raised this a couple days ago in the audio we played from one of the morning news shows. Pat Buchanan raised this. He said at the very end of that interview, like a bomb, a grenade going off in the studio, he said, I'm not sure that George W. Bush wants Roe v. Wade overturned. And he had two things to say about it. He said, number one, it's this nominee. And number two, he's never said he wants it overturned. He's never come out and said he wants to see it overturned. And, you know, I think just to be realistic, we have to entertain that possibility. Not because the president wants abortion. I don't think that's true. Not because the president supports abortion. I don't think that's true. But because it would be the battle royale of all battle royales in American history to try and overturn Roe v. Wade. It would be a huge gamble. It would be an amazing failure. If it were a failure, it would be an unprecedented success if it were a success. And Pat Buchanan doubts whether or not the president has the will to fight. He even said at one point the president has backed down from a fight. And what he's talking about there is, with this nominee, he has backed down from a fight. The fight was there. Everybody had their dukes up, and the president sat down in his corner. That was Pat Buchanan's take on this nominee. Now, his contention was the fight is the president's to win because the American public doesn't like abortion, and if you overturn Roe, it goes back to the states, and then the American public can decide, rather than having a 1973 court decide. That all makes perfect sense to me. I want to see Roe overturned. Will it get rid of abortion? No, it won't. But to not talk to your nominee about it, for whatever reasons, Barry, I understand what you're saying from D.C. I understand what Barry said. Because everything is politics, and politics is, in its essence, the art of the possible, not dreams, not visions, not what you want, but what you can accomplish. I'm wondering whether there's enough political calculus here having been done. Someone says, look, we can't overturn Roe v. Wade. Therefore, it's not relevant to this nominee's qualifications, or I don't need to know it. And that's why we didn't talk about it. What the question should have been asked the president in the Rose Garden last week when he said we didn't talk about it. The next question should have been, why? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Now, someone here in the studio suggests that maybe the president doesn't need to talk to the nominee about it. And this is reasonable, too, because through the years, he's learned enough about her to be able to get a bead on what she thinks. I didn't need to ask her because I got a pretty good idea of what she thinks already. Well, the president said he didn't say that. But maybe that's true. I mean, there are a lot of things I don't ask my wife about. I don't ask her opinion on it because after 18 years of marriage, I got a pretty good idea what she thinks. I can tell my kids when they're up to something, your mom's not going to like that. Or don't say that to your mother. Because I know her well enough, I don't even have to go check with her. We don't have to have a conversation. Because I know her well enough. Now, the president has known Harriet Myers for a long, long time. Very close working relationship with her. And maybe he's learned enough. But you see, even then, I think you need to talk to her. Just to double check here, Harriet, this whole Roe thing, where do you stand? Is that good law or bad law? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. And we will permit time here for the rest of this very interesting audio from Dr. James Dobson and Focus on the Family on this very subject. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. It's Open Lines Issues, etc. 15 minutes left in today's program. Let's talk with Chris. He's calling from his car. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Very well.
Tremendous. You made a contention a minute ago that, in your opinion, Bush does not support abortion. He made the statement the last time he ran that he didn't think the people were ready for Roe v. Wade to be overturned, and that's why he didn't support it. But I don't think it's something you can be neutral on. If you frame it as in the slavery discussion, either you're really for it or you're really against it. And you
yeah.
can't say, well, I don't want to overturn it, but therefore that means I also don't support it.
We have made that argument. Chris, thank you. Thank you very much. We've made that argument on these airwaves 1,000 times. I don't know how many times with Scott Klusendorf we have said, look, can someone be neutral on this whole abortion issue? Well, you know, I'm personally opposed, but I don't want to see, I don't want to see it made illegal. And a thousand times the answers come back the same. No, that is not a position of neutrality. That is not a position of neutrality. That is a de facto vote in favor of abortion. And the comparison is made with slavery. Look, I'm personally opposed to slavery, but I don't think it should be illegal. History would judge that anyone saying that back in the antebellum South would be judged to be not an abolitionist, but in favor of slavery, or at least in favor of its continuance. And I think the parallel is as parallel as it can get. Aaron calls from his car. Aaron, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hi. What's up? Aaron, welcome. Aaron, is he still there? No. All right. Aaron, thank you very much. We got a few words out of him. Give us a call back. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Okay, here's James Dobson again. The president said last week in the Rose Garden that he hadn't talked about Roe with Harriet Meyer. James Dobson had a conversation with Karl Rove. Yesterday on his program, Focus on the Family, James Dobson is answering the question, did Roe come up when you talked with Karl Rove?
We did not discuss Roe v. Wade in any context or any other pending issue that will be considered by the court.
Now, I have no reason to think that he is, I think he's telling the truth, which even leaves me more stupefied. I am, this very seldom happens, but I am stupefied by this. I mean, maybe I'm just stupid, but I'm stupefied by this. You got the president's right-hand man on the phone. You're talking about a Supreme Court justice, a Supreme Court nominee, and the subject of Roe v. Wade doesn't come up? Look, Karl Rove hasn't made the nomination. Karl Rove is not the nominee. Dr. Dobson, you can talk to Karl Rove about Roe v. Wade. That's okay. You can ask about it. He said it did not come up in any context. So I'm left with just one question. Why? I mean, you can make political arguments for why the president wouldn't talk about it with the nominee. Or practical arguments there. Fine. James Dobson is not operating by beltway rules. Karl Rove can say, I don't want to talk about it. You don't talk about it in any context? Stupefied. Aaron is back, calling from his cell phone. Aaron, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, thanks, Pastor Todd. My comment is just maybe President Bush strategically, intentionally didn't bring it up with his nominee just to kind of pass off some of the attack that she would get if the pro-abortionists knew that she was against abortion, then they would attack her. So maybe to try to slide her through, he just intentionally didn't bring it up. Maybe he knows where she stands, but he just intentionally didn't bring it up. That was just my comment.
Well, I think it almost would have to be that, Aaron, without assigning any ulterior or mischievous motives to the president. I think it would almost have to be that. Look, I'm not going to bring it up for her own good. But look, all the cards are on the table. We're playing this entire hand face up. Everyone, she is either for abortion or she's against it. She either thinks Roe is good law or she thinks it's bad law. She either would vote to overturn it or not. Now, she could say, I can't tell you unless I see the case. That's fine. That's fine. But everyone knows that this is the question for any Supreme Court nominee. Everyone knows. This just sounds to me like kabuki theater. Like shadow puppets. I just cannot imagine. I guess I'm kind of in the position of saying, if we all know where everyone stands on this Roe issue, and the person whose opinion matters absolutely the most at this moment in American history is the only person that we won't ask, it just doesn't make any sense to me. It really doesn't. Matilda, Mathilda is on the line. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Matilda,
mm-hmm. Welcome.
Well, I think we have to give President Bush a lot more credit than we're doing on this program. Surely he has many subordinates who have questioned Ms. Myers in great detail and gotten all this information from her and passed it on to him. That leaves him free to honestly say, I personally did not talk to her about these issues, but I am so confident that he really knows where she stands on these issues.
Matilda, thank you. I mean, that's a reasonable explanation. That's a perfectly reasonable explanation that his subordinates know, the people who need to know know. He knows, but he didn't feel the need to talk to her about it because he already scoped her out on that. That's a reasonable explanation. All right. I still think that it would, as I said before, I still think it would be a good idea to double check just in case you might not, you know. There have been a lot of presidents who've nominated a lot of Supreme Court justices who thought they knew what they were putting on the court and then found out later, oops. Okay? We had a caller before, enumerate a few of them. So you might want to double check. It still doesn't, and I should have asked Matilda while she was still on the line, why doesn't Karl Rove talk about it with James Dobson then? Why doesn't James Dobson ask? Here's Dr. Dobson once again. He says he understands why potential nominees would be backing out of this process.
The Democrats have so politicized that process that it's become an ordeal. And many people just don't want to go through that. And I'm not sure I blame them.
Okay, now that's reasonable. I wouldn't go through it. Not for all the tea in China. I wouldn't go through it. I couldn't. I wouldn't put my family through it. Not that it's ever really a possibility, but I wouldn't. And I think most of us wouldn't either. Well, here's James Dobson one more time. He says that he's trying to tell us what he did learn from Karl Rove in his conversation about Harriet Myers about her religious views.
It's what we all know now, that Harriet Myers is an evangelical Christian, that she is from a very conservative church, which is almost universally pro-life.
All right, now, just a minute. Just a minute. Is this how the communication takes place? I'm a little frustrated. Maybe you can tell. I mean, Roe matters. I think it ought to matter to everybody. This isn't just some issue. This is, at this moment in history, this is the issue of politics, of morals, of the social fabric of the United States. It is life and death, as I said before. Not a matter of opinion. And not a matter upon which one can stand neutral. But is this how communication takes place? Did Karl Rove say to James Dobson, look, she's an evangelical Christian. She's a member of a very conservative church that is almost 100% pro-life. Oh, by the way, I've mentioned this many times before. Pastors have a tendency to assume that their churches are pro-life, that their members are pro-life. They don't ask. They just assume because people sit quietly and nod during Life Sunday. And they just assume that the parishioners are pro-life. It's a big assumption, a huge assumption, a gargantuan assumption to make. Okay, she's an evangelical Christian, a conservative congregation that's almost 100% pro-life. Well, why is that relevant if you didn't even feel the need, Dr. Dobson, to bring up the issue of Roe with Karl Rove in any context? Is it enough to know that she's simply an evangelical Christian? Well, let's check the percentages. Go to Barna sometime. Look at his research on how many evangelical Christians are pro-choice. Check. By the way, it's a lot less than 100%. So saying she's an evangelical Christian, I mean, either somebody talked to her and found out she was pro-life, and now they're saying, well, we're not going to say she's pro-life. Let's just say she's an evangelical Christian and let people read between the lines. Or they don't know. All right, we've got a few minutes left here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Anything you want to talk about, of course, but this is where our conversation is leading. One more James Dobson cut here. Where is it? Oh, he says here, there was a rumor flying around that Dobson, because he had this conversation with Karl Rove and talked about it, would be called to testify in the confirmation hearings before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
if they want to do that, then I just suggest that they quit talking about it and just go do it. I have nothing to hide, and I'll be happy to come and talk to you.
Okay, so I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm sure he would relish the opportunity to get a chance for that kind of FaceTime on television and to talk about and say what he said here. Well, we know what he said. We know what wasn't said. That's more relevant to me, what wasn't said in that conversation with Karl Rove. Now, look, I would be very nervous talking to Karl Rove on the telephone. I would be. He's a big fish. And I'm approaching this as someone who inquires for a living. But I would consider myself personally remiss if Karl Rove called me one night and said, "Hello, Wilkin, I want to talk to you about this Harriet Myers nomination." And I didn't just come out and ask, "What do you guys know about her and Roe? What do you guys know about her on abortion? You don't have to give me details, just tell me." And I don't know if I'd be satisfied with, she's an evangelical Christian member of a very conservative congregation that's almost 100% pro-life. I said, "That didn't really tell me a lot, Carl." That's either a glass half full or a glass half empty. And half empty means another justice on the court who would allow a law that never should have seen the light of day, a decision that never, ever should have been considered on its legal merits or its moral merits, to stand for a lot longer than it should. It is life and death. It is. That's why this is important. I don't care about the Supreme Court. I don't care about President nominating Supreme Court justices. I don't care about Karl Rove or James Dobson. Well, I care about them personally as people, but I don't care about any of this. The only thing that makes this worth caring about is that there's a possibility, a slight possibility, that this could be one step further to reducing the number of dead babies in this country. And I'm sorry to put it so grossly, but that's the way it is. As to the relevance of religious views, you know, Bill Clinton, Jimmy Carter, they were pro-choice, but they were Southern Baptists. Both of the President Bushes, they were Methodist. He's a Methodist, an Episcopalian. They were pro-life. Those are liberal church denominations. Pro-life doesn't seem like religion matters a lot, really. I mean, saying she's an evangelical Christian doesn't tell me that she's pro-life. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.